some of us who are old enough used to go to poetry readings where the poets would throw their papers down after they finished reading. This is the first time I've ever seen anybody throw a cell phone. And I have to say, I really feel old. This introduction to Conrad is in three parts, like an ode. Part one. C.A. Conrad, Conrad to his many friends, is riveting in a lot of ways. His enthusiasm is compelling, his narratives are spot on, and he can sit in front of a daunting microphone and tell quite a story about seeing Jack Spicer's own tarot pack and what he felt and understood. This on Penn Sound's Poem Talk about on Spicer. Conrad's somatic poetry exercises are astonishing claims of the spiritual, physical, medicinal, erotic presence of poetry as a mode of defined attentiveness, acting into poetry by readiness and spiritual yearning and poise. They're often maps, bodies, and bordering states between the living and the dead, between a tree and oneself, between what one eats and who one is. They are instructional prose poems about ingesting and smelling and touching the universe, the inside out and outside in of the body with all its edges and folds. Two. C.A. Conrad is the recipient of the Gil Ott Book Award for The Book of Frank, Shacks Press, 2009, that actually went out of print, but Joshua Beckman of Wave Books is picking it up as The Book of Frank for a second printing, second edition, with an introduction by Eileen Miles. Conrad is also the author of Advanced Elvis Course, 2009, Somatic Midge, 2008, Deviant Propulsion, 2006. His collaboration with poet Frank Sherlock, titled The City, Real and Imagined, has just been released by Factory School Books. Three, part of what I called Rachel Rapp a few weeks ago at the ICA with the release of The City, Real and Imagined. Something with intelligence and compassion made by wandering the chartered streets that some might call a derive to achieve a double recitative of urban planning or maybe playing or playing or plating. In the sense of braiding voices together, urban but not urbane, not elite, but rather political, critical, intelligent, and sometimes mad, the active activity of activists seeing, thinking, and writing. City, city, marks of weakness, marks of woe, said William Blake, a compatriot of looking hard at these calibrations of triage with all the exactitude of the griot, or a Williamsy gesture of all cross-lit vectors of veracity, no hectors, no whining, no pity. Compassion, yes, but no condescension is what I mean. Contention with power, yes, but no resentful glower. Judgment, yes, but just of those who make it on the backs of others and their otherness. And doing this realist, real, seeing thing without the need for obfuscation or opacity, but rather only confrontational clarity. This is class smart mojo. This is low-down smart-ass sense of woe and weakness in Blake's sense and of exhilaration at seeing, at putting out statement, no clout, but the art of telling what needs to be told, no fake, all bold, that we are lucky to have, a saturating articulation of critique and resistant searing, seeing, and hearing. Please welcome Conrad.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for coming. It's a nice reading with you, Vladimir. That was lovely. This is Vladimir's first reading. I hope you don't mind me saying that. It's really good for your first reading, especially the phone being thrown. In 1994, it's funny because we were talking about back in that time period, there was a poet, is he here? I better make sure he's not here first. This poet, well, I won't say his name, but he tried to attack, you know, the cell phone thing was one thing, but he tried to attack my friend Daniel Kleiner with a knife. And Jerome Robinson, some of you might know him, he tackled him to the ground. Anyway, 1994, the selected, oh, I love that sound. Yeah, do you like that?
No.
Yeah. Oh, you don't? Okay. The Selected Stephen Jonas came out in 1994, and it was one of those books that I read cover to cover. And as soon as I was finished, read it cover to cover again. It was a book that I he was a friend of Jack Spicer's. You say Spicer too. Some people say Spicer. I don't know.
We're right.
And, but he had, but especially Exercises for Ear, which is this long sequence where he promises, he says, I've come to chew up your language. And he really made good on that promise, at least for me. But there was this one portion at the end of Quarrel and Him where he says, from the bridge to the broken span, and now comes the failure of the poem as a reconstructed disconnection. I got kind of hung up on the part about the poem failing and the idea of this vast idea that he was trying to give us about, what he was giving us, about separation and how it's all about separation. And it doesn't matter whether you're, I mean, you could be atheist, Buddhist, a Satanist. It doesn't matter, but you're still going to think about the why of existence. And I was talking about, every time I talk about this, everybody wants to put the how of existence on the flip side. And I actually think that it's just around the corner of the why. And it's sort of like the soma and then the flesh being the how. And that's kind of what I'd go for with the somatic exercises, where I create these exercises. And I want to read one of them, where I create the exercise, execute the, you know, just do it, write the poem. And I'm going to read the exercise first. This one actually is about Emily Dickinson. And one of the things that Susan Howe did for us with her book, My Emily Dickinson, was to blow down the doors of Dickinson's house. I mean, it really just opened. When you read that book, you realize you have the ability to see Dickinson in a completely different way for yourself, and I felt inspired by that. My Emily Dickinson, taking that lead, is the defiant poet. And, I know there's this notion that she was just huddled in her apartment in her house in Amherst. And she said no frequently. My Emily Dickinson was the poet who said no. And my Emily Dickinson was the poet who, when Amherst was switching sects in their religious order, she was the one who said, no, I'm going to stay. I'm a poet. You bitches don't tell poets what to do. And the thing is, Emily Dickinson is used as the forerunner to a lot of anthologies, like Poems for a Millennium, The Other Side of the Century, that one as well. Well, I think she's also the forerunner to punk rock, when you get right down to it. And that's what I wrote on this little flag. It says, my Emily Dickinson was punk rock. And I blackened out all the stars except for one for Emily. And then what I'm about to read, there's the exercise, and then there's a little bit of dirt from her yard here. It's hers. You can have it checked out with a biologist or whatever. All right, so. Okay, so the exercise is called Anoint Thyself. And it's for my friends John Coletti and Jess Mines. Visit the home of a deceased poet you admire and bring some natural thing back with you. I went to Emily Dickinson's house the day after a reading event with my friend Susie Timmons. I scraped dirt from the foot of huge trees in the backyard into a little pot. We then drove into the woods where we found miniature pears, apples, and cherries to eat. I meditated in the arms of an oak tree with a pot of Emily's dirt, waking to the flutter of a red cardinal on a branch a foot or so from my face, staring, showing me his little tongue. When I returned to Philadelphia, I didn't shower for 3 days, then rubbed Emily's dirt all over my body, kneaded her rich Massachusetts soil deeply into my flesh, then put on my clothes and went out into the world. Every once in a while, I stuck my nose inside the neck of my shirt to inhale her delicious, sweet earth covering me. I felt re-virginized through the ceremony of my senses. I could feel her power tell me these are the ways to walk and speak and shift each glance into total concentration for maximum usage of our little allotment of time on a planet. Lose and waste no more time, poet. Lose and waste no more time, she said to me, as I took note after note on the world around me for the poem. Now, this is the poem, and it's called Emily Dickinson Came to Earth, and Then She Left. Your sweaty party dress and my sweaty party dress lasted a few minutes until the tomato was gone. Someday they would disambiguate you, but not while I'm around. Our species won, Emily. We won. It feels so good to be winning. The flame of victory, pass it around. It never goes out. Dinosaurs ruled Massachusetts. Dinosaurs fucking and laying eggs in Amherst, Boston, Mount Holyoke. Then you appeared, High Priestess, pulling it out of the goddamn garden with both hands. You, Emily, remember the first time comprehending a struck match can spread a flame. It feels good to win this fair and square. Protest my assessment all you want, but not needing to dream is like not needing to see the world awaken to itself. Indestructible epiphanies consume the path, and just because you're having fun doesn't mean you're not going to die. Recrimination is the fruit to defy with unexpected appetite. I will be your outsider if that's how you need me. Electric company's stupid threatening letters cannot affect a poet who has faced death. Thanks. So, this is my idea of a chapbook. You can have one afterwards if you want.